One comforting piece of data that gets talked about a lot is that 19 out of 20 people who get COVID-19 don't require hospitalization. That means that 95% of the people who get this disease are able to recover at home. This is definitely comforting and has definitely been comforting for me, especially since not everybody gets it in the first place. Most of us haven't had it, and most of us that have had it or will have it will recover without ventilators or oxygen or long stays in the hospital. That's great news. Now that said, I've also heard that comforting piece of data tossed around with the implication that COVID isn't a big deal. Obviously, for the small percentage of the population that do require hospitalization or suffer serious side effects, it's a big deal, and it's downright tragic for the families that have lost loved ones to the virus. But what about the 95%? What does recovering at home actually look like? Obviously, this virus affects people in a wide spectrum of ways, and no two cases are exactly alike. Researchers say that anywhere from 25% to 80% of people with COVID-19 aren't even aware that they have it. But mild cases don't always mean what many seem to think it means. This isn't just a flu or a cold. It does some weird things that affect people in a lot of different ways. One woman I spoke with while researching this episode shared that her sister, who wished to remain anonymous, had a COVID-19 related stroke. She's in her 30s. Thankfully, she is recovering. Our next guest has been on our show before. Nikki Meyer was featured in our third episode titled Women Are Creating a Culture of Nonviolence. In fact, she works for the Center of Nonviolence, supporting people affected by violence in today's culture and helping create a system that raises the voices of marginalized people. She is a genderqueer feminist and recently finished teaching her first class at PFW. If you're interested in hearing her talk about the work she does and her perspectives on privilege and feminism, I'd really recommend giving that episode a listen. It's still one of my favorite conversations from our first season. Today, though, Nikki is on our show because she is actually recovering from COVID-19. All of us at Women Are Fort Wayne are very relieved that her case was relatively mild. She wasn't hospitalized and has made it through the ordeal better than many. She's here to share her experience as a window into the ways that even a mild case of COVID-19 differs from other viral infections that we're more familiar with. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Nikki.
Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, of course. Before we get too far into things, just how are you feeling? How are you doing right now?
In general, I think like many people, I'm like feeling a little bit stressed out just about being in a virtual world now, while we navigate COVID. But mostly I'm feeling a little bit like I've got some brain fog as I'm like stumbling across my words right now. I've got like, you know, just from like having COVID, I think, I don't know if it's from that or just the stress of the world that we're living in now, but like I've been struggling with some like headaches and brain fog stuff going on. But overall, I feel like I'm doing well given all of that, you know. I mean, I feel like capable of functioning for the most part at this point.
I'm so glad. And I'm so glad that the case of COVID that you had was as mild as it was and that you're healthy enough to be on here on the show with us.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know for sure if I had COVID because when I got sick back in March, there weren't widespread tests available for it. Right. I do remember when I got sick that I had pretty extreme brain fog for about a week, and it was no joke. I can only imagine having a longer experience with that and having the lingering system, how much that's affecting you today.
Yeah. Well, and it's the other thing that's like, I think frustrating about it is it's so hard to know whether it's really because of COVID or the effects of being in front of a screen all the time. Right. Because now like a lot of us who haven't been in front of screens a lot are now forced to do like meetings and conduct business in front of a screen for way longer than we normally would. So is that part of it? Like, it's so hard to know. But either way, it's still a reality. So like I have to, you know, live with and address the reality that I'm dealing with.
Absolutely. And yes, sitting in front of a screen all day is decidedly hard and it makes it difficult to focus. So that definitely is an effect of this, even if you haven't necessarily gotten sick.
Right.
So when the COVID crisis started, you were working at the Center for Nonviolence. How did that transition go for you?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I remember, so I'm on our executive directorship. It's like a team of us that perform the functions as of an executive director because we're a collective, right? And so I remember one of my coworkers saying, are we meet, they requested that we had the executive directorship have a focused meeting. And I forget how they worded it, but I wasn't registering that it was about COVID. And then that's what it was. And I almost laughed when somebody said, is it in reference to COVID? And I was like, of course, that's not why we're meeting. But then it was like, because I hadn't taken it seriously yet, right? Like this was back in like early March, like maybe, or the end of February or beginning of March. And so I wasn't taking it seriously. I was like, whatever, this is like the, you know, one of these other viruses that have gone around in the past and whatever, it's not a big deal. But then the more that we met about it and I was like listening to my coworkers who were taking it seriously, I was like, oh my gosh, this is serious. Why wasn't I taking it seriously? You know, I think I was just affected by what I was seeing online and things. So anyway, we ended up, because we took it seriously, and we have a lot of people, not only on staff, but clients that we work with who are high risk, we decided to suspend services back in mid-March. And so at that point, because I also have a partner who's high risk, he was in the middle of hepatitis C treatment. We were both kind of like, we need to be really careful what we're doing, because if he gets sick, you know, also having cirrhosis of the liver, like this could be really bad for us, you know, and I have asthma. And so for me, it was like, I went from being like, this is not even a thing, to being like, oh my gosh, this is really serious, to then taking like every precaution possible to, you know, protect my partner primarily, but also me, because I have lung issues. But then of course, you know, we had been quarantining for like quite a long time before I ever even got sick. So it's one of those things where it's like a little confusing how you even contract it, in my mind, at least.
So then you two don't actually know how you got it.
No, I mean, the best that we could come up with was like, my partner was, like I said, he was going through hepatitis C treatment, and his second round of medication was accidentally sent to the hospital instead of to our house. So he had to, like, we kind of broke our little mini self-imposed quarantine out of, you know, fear of what might happen if we got ill. We broke that for him to go to the hospital to get his medicine because he needed to have it. And that's the best we can come up with, that we contracted it, because he did kind of end up going on a wild goose chase in the hospital, because where he went to go get the medication, they were like, oh, it's not here. And they took him all over the hospital and eventually brought him back to where he had originally looked for the medication, and they found it. So he was kind of like, you know, horrified because he was wearing a mask, but nobody else that he was interacting with was. And this would have been like, you know, probably early April, I guess. Like very beginning of April, end of March, early April. And so he and I were taking it super seriously, but then we go to the hospital, and I don't know if it's because they didn't have like supplies that they needed at the time, because there was shortages of everything at the time. I don't know. And if that wasn't how we contracted it, it must have been through, you know, we were getting food delivered and obviously still receiving mail, but we were wiping everything down, cleaning everything off. You know, like we were trying to be extra, extra careful, and felt like we were going too above and beyond, but then turns out we got ill anyway.
So when did you start feeling sick?
My memory is that around April 12th, I think, was when I first was like, man, I think I'm actually sick. It was like that weekend. That was like, April 12th was a Sunday. That weekend I was like feeling kind of off. And then I think by Sunday I was just so tired, and I had this like weird, wasn't a sore throat, but it was like a tickle in my throat, kind of. Then immediately, suddenly, all of a sudden, I started having lung problems after that. I guess for probably that whole week, then for like another 7 to 10 days, my fatigue was so extreme. I couldn't really function. Like I was trying to work virtually, finish teaching a class at PFW that I teach, and then also finish my master's program. And I was like, I don't know that I'm going to be able to do this. Like, I was just like, I was finishing all those things up at that time. And I was just, I was not sure that I was going to be capable of doing it. I thought maybe I was going to have to like ask for like extensions in my grad program and like all this stuff, you know, like I just didn't know what was going to happen. Cause I was just like, I'm not sure what's wrong with me. At the time I was still kind of in denial that I had COVID. Cause I was like, we haven't done anything to get it. Like how would I have gotten it? And I also didn't have a thermometer. So I wasn't able to like see if I had a fever, but I didn't really feel very feverish at first. So for me, it was like, I just had like lots of fatigue. And then I'm going to get real with you guys. I also had some diarrhea. And as a vegan, I haven't had diarrhea since I can remember. Like I don't eat foods that disrupt my system like that. So like, for me, it was like, what is going on? And this was before people were really saying diarrhea was a symptom. So I'm still in denial, right? Like I don't think I have a fever. I'm thinking my lung issues I'm having are are my asthma or something, you know, because it's also allergy season and I get like allergies and asthma stuff. So like all of the things that I was experiencing early on just seemed like I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was like, am I just, is being in the house so much really messing with me? Like I didn't know what it was. I really didn't know.
I know that when I got sick, and I don't know that what I had was COVID because I never had a positive test. I experienced some of the shortness of breath, and it was not like what I would consider normal lung stuff. What was the lung symptoms like for you?
Yeah, so for me, I would say it kind of was similar to normal lung stuff just because I have asthma. So I'm used to just my lungs doing some funky stuff depending on what I'm sick with. But I could see for people who don't have asthma or, you know, like that might, their experience would be different. But for me, it was definitely like, I could not catch my breath. Like there were times, especially like at night where I'd be laying down, which is also normal for me having asthma, but where I would be, as I'm laying down, I was like, I cannot breathe. And I was starting to panic. So when you can't, if you've ever not been able to breathe, you probably have experienced like the anxiety that comes with that. And then you quickly, if you're not careful, will have a panic attack, which makes it worse. So because you can't breathe, you then, your body like does this thing where it's like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And then you can panic, which makes it worse. So like I was experiencing some of that where I was like frantically looking for like my inhaler and the inhaler wasn't working. And so I was using, you know, I have a breathing treatment that when my lungs are really bad, I will do the treatment. It's like a handheld like machine that you breathe in with the mask and everything. And that was barely giving me relief. It was giving me relief for like maybe 30 seconds or, you know, like at most 30 minutes. Like it was like this short amount of relief. And so, but it was like, it's hard to explain lung issues to people who don't have them, I think. But to me, it just felt like something, it wasn't, the best I could say is like pressure on my lungs that where it was. And for me, it was like, I know it's like my bronchial tubes, I think, not being a medical professional, but having lung issues. I think it was like, it just felt like I couldn't get air into my lungs. Like my bronchial tubes were constricting, but nothing was helping. So it just felt like this pressure. And like, anytime I took a deep breath in, I wasn't getting enough in. So then it was like, I was constantly doing these weird, like breathing things where I'd go like really quickly, like as if I was trying, like gasping for air and couldn't get it.
Now, did your partner get sick at the same time or did he get sick later?
So I actually got sick first. It's, you know, with COVID my understanding anyway, like I was the one who had symptoms first. Like I started showing symptoms on like a Sunday, I would say. And then by midweek, he was feeling ill too. Although the interesting thing was, even though he has a more compromised immune system than me because of his hep C and his cirrhosis of the liver, I struggled way longer. And I'm assuming, I'm chalking that up to, he was on strong antiviral medication getting rid of his hep C. And so like, I don't know if that supported his immune system in a way that helped or what. I'm not a medical professional, I don't know. But I definitely got hit harder than he did, though of course, not hard enough to go to the hospital. Although a couple times I thought, okay, screw this, I'm going to the hospital. Though didn't feel like I needed to do that. Ultimately didn't do that, but but I got sick about 2 weeks after he had to go to the hospital to get that medication. So it kind of fell in line with that's where we could have gotten it, but I started showing symptoms first.
And how long were you sick before you got your test?
I got tested 10 days after starting to have like real symptoms where I knew like something's wrong with me. And then it took them about 3 day turnaround. So by the time I had gotten the test, I was almost basically, it was about 2 weeks, that I'd been ill. So by the time I got the test result back telling me that I was COVID positive, I was starting to feel better. So like, thankfully though, we had been quarantining that whole time and hadn't been in public. And as soon as I started showing symptoms, like we just did not leave the house at all. I mean, like the most we did was like John went to the mailbox to get mail. Like I like literally didn't even leave the house.
So when you went and got the test, what was that like? What is the testing like?
I don't know if anybody's had ever had a nasal swab done, but those are not fun. Like I'd never had one. I didn't know what I was signing up for. But so I went to a drive-through testing site at Ivy Tech's campus on the north side. And we just drove up. There was like, you know, National Guard folks, I think, that were like directing people where to go. And, you know, it was like definitely felt like this is serious business. People are taking it really seriously, protecting themselves. So like there are people like in full, you know, like medical suits with like gloves and masks and all sorts of stuff that were like carefully grabbing materials, telling you to roll your window up only, you know, halfway or whatever, so they could get supplies in and out. But it was like this very like structured environment where it felt like, okay, people are, they're taking this very seriously. That's good. That made me feel good. That made us both, my partner and I both feel good. But so we drove up. There actually wasn't even a line when we went, surprisingly. But so they came and they did my test first. They took this large Q-tip looking thing and shoved it all the way in my nose, like all the way back to where I'm like, are you sure that continues to go back that far? And then they like rotated it like 360 degrees and then back again and like did that for 10 seconds on, and then they pulled it out. They took the same one and put it in my other nostril and did the same thing. And it was like, you're like, my eyes were like watering and I was like, oh, like you can't really function while they're doing that. I'd never experienced something like that before. So I don't know. It was definitely didn't want to have to do it again.
I'm sure. Yeah. Did you have to have an appointment for that? Or was it something that you could literally just drive up to?
Yeah, no. So mine was just a drive-through. It was first come, first serve. It was when they were still only testing people who were essential workers, or they were starting to open it up to people who were not necessarily essential workers, but were starting to show symptoms. And so we went, like, I am technically an essential worker, but hadn't been working in that capacity, right? I hadn't been interacting with clients at that time. But we were like, well, we're showing symptoms. Let's go get it, go get tested. Cause I was just feeling like, I am still feeling terrible. You know, like, what is this? Like, and it was my fatigue and my headaches that really prompted me to go get care. Cause I was like, the lung thing was worrying me, but I was like, okay, I can go to the doctor and take care of my lung stuff. But like, what's going on? Why am I so tired? Like I would be up for like 2 hours and I'd have to take a nap and I would nap for like 5 hours. So like, it was the not being able to function because I was so exhausted and my head hurt so bad and was so foggy that prompted me to go actually get the test done.
Would you say that the fatigue and the headaches and the brain fog was worse than the lung symptoms?
Well, it made it harder to work. It's like to be productive. Because like the lung stuff, it does make it hard to function for sure. But like if I was sitting still and I was being careful, like I could still like type a paper or something, right? Like it was uncomfortable. It worried me at times. If I thought too much about it, it would induce anxiety, which would make it worse. But the fatigue and the headaches and the brain fog made it impossible. Like I couldn't even process information. Like I was trying to write papers and do things for work. And I like literally would just stare at the screen for like a half hour and be like, I still don't know what this is saying. Like I literally couldn't process information. It was like, it was coming in and it would just wasn't going anywhere. So was it worse as far as like the pain and stuff, like, I don't know. But like, as far as my ability to like function in the world, it made it way harder.
I think a lot of people still think of COVID as being a cough or being a lung disease or being like the flu. And I think that from what I've heard from other people that have had it and been diagnosed, and from what I experienced when I think I had it, it was not like a flu. It's very different. And the brain fog and the fatigue was the biggest difference for me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I tend to get the flu very often, to be honest. I usually get like bronchitis and stuff like that. But when I have had the flu, yeah, this was different. This was like, I mean, honestly, my experience was like every symptom ever all at one time is what it felt like. I mean, it built, like, it kind of like slowly more and more symptoms were added, but like, I mean, I had the whole gamut. It was like everything. And like, not at first, but like I said, it kind of like built up all these symptoms. And then for a while I had them all at one time. So like, I couldn't taste things. I couldn't smell things. I still can't really smell stuff. Like, my sense of smell never really came back. Like, I can faintly smell things, but like, I'm not smelling random things as I'm like walking around. It's like an odorless. So like, I don't know. There's just like, and I had sinus stuff, and I had like, my sinus stuff never got like I didn't have any like color in my mucus like you do when you get an infection, but it was like constantly present. So like, I sounded like I had like a sinus infection all the time. And like I said, diarrhea and like stomach stuff, and then the lungs and the fatigue. It was like, it was like a laundry list of things that all were, I was experiencing all at the same time, which I've never experienced before. Usually it's just a couple symptoms with whatever you've got going on. So like, to say that it's just like a lung infection is like, I mean, it is a lung infection for sure, right? Like, it definitely attacked my lungs, but the other stuff was what made it unbearable, and for me at least.
And I've been hearing that sort of story from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that you went through all of that. It sounds like it was absolutely awful, and I'm just glad that you did have what is considered a mild case.
Yeah. Well, and I have an amazing group of people that care about me that were there to help. Like, when things were the worst, we didn't know what was wrong. So I was kind of just like suffering silently to myself, like, man, this is horrible. I'm sleeping all the time. I can't function. But, I don't know. I had so many people offer to like, and actually follow through, you know, right, with like giving us food and like bringing us things and like finding me a thermometer because I didn't have one. And like, I don't know, all sorts of stuff. So like, yeah, I mean, I am lucky that, I mean, I'm not lucky that I got ill, but like, I'm lucky that it only hit us as hard as it did, you know, that it wasn't worse. And that like, I have people that were able to get me groceries when we really needed stuff and things like that. So like, it made it, you know, I mean, I'm privileged in that way that I wasn't struggling for things that I needed while dealing with COVID. For people who are, I don't even know how, I mean, that's just, it's hard to even imagine and process what it would be like if you were struggling like financially or didn't have a job, but also weren't having an income coming in, like what to do, how you would navigate COVID with all of that. I mean, I just, or if you, you know, weren't a native English speaker and you're trying to navigate, like, how do I get help and assistance? Like, it's hard for me to fully process what that would have been like, because my brain wasn't working. Like, I could barely function myself, let alone if I was having to navigate other, you know, layers of barriers that would be going on.
That perspective is really, really important. I know that there is a higher percentage of people that are getting this who are essential workers that come from lower income families that work at places like supermarkets. And I can imagine that it's hitting those populations in a completely different way than those of us who do have that kind of support and that kind of privilege.
Yeah. Well, and everything that I've been reading, I haven't seen anything recently since, you know, like race and racism is on people's minds in a different way right now. But what I was reading as I was ill and before that and everything was that like COVID was hitting Black and Brown communities especially hard. And that's for several different reasons. Like some that I was already mentioning and that you've mentioned, but some of that is just, you know, when you look at different studies that have been done, you see that consistently over time, you'll see that, like, for example, Black women's pain isn't taken as seriously. So like they will go to the doctor and be like blown off because Black women are strong and they're just complaining or whatever it is. Right. And so like, I don't know. I mean, just seeing the way that like the problems that we have in this country around race and racism, how they manifest in different ways. And then, you know, you've got all the stuff that's happening, that's a spotlight's being shown on police brutality around race and racism right now. But then there's also COVID still happening simultaneously and people out protesting to stand up for their rights. But then now they're more vulnerable, even though they already were more vulnerable, because all the studies I was seeing and all the like news articles I was seeing was showing how Black and brown communities, and especially Black communities, were actually having higher rates of COVID, or they were getting sick in more debilitating ways than white folks were, especially. So I don't know. Yeah, thinking about some of that stuff, it's like hard to fully process as a white person who is coming from a place of privilege on so many different levels. But I think it's also important to think about, like, for people that you interact with or just people in our community that either don't have jobs or who have jobs that can't call off work or can't work virtually, or who don't speak English, or, you know, whatever the laundry list of things that already has them put in a position of oppression or more hurdles to overcome, dealing with COVID at the same time puts them at even more risk and it makes life even harder. And I think it's easy to forget about that when we're struggling with our own stuff. But for people that have to deal with all of those things simultaneously, they can't forget about it because it's their life. And I think that it's important to talk about that and to think about it and think about ways to address some of that stuff. Like, I don't have solutions to that, but I would like to see people talking about it more and thinking about how to deal with, you know, a pandemic that happens in the future, that we are protecting populations that have been marginalized by society a little bit better so that they're not further marginalized. I mean, I would hope that we could address some of these things as a general public and think about public health from that kind of a standpoint, I guess, too, when you're thinking about marginalization and race and racism and things of that sort.
So all told, how long were you sick?
Well, that's such a hard question to answer because like sick as in being debilitated from functioning in the like normally, it was a good 2.5 to 3 weeks, probably more like 2.5 weeks. But then I'm still dealing with what I assume are side effects of COVID because they weren't problems before and they are problems now. So, but like sick, what I would call sick, I would say it was about roughly 3 weeks.
And what are the lingering symptoms that you have? Is it just the brain fog or is there more to it?
It's primarily brain fog and headaches. Yeah, that's, I would say those two. I mean, because also like sometimes I do have lung issues, there are some lung things that kind of come and go, but nothing that's like stuck around like the brain fog and the headaches.
What would you like for people to know as we face this ongoing pandemic?
Whew, that's a good question. I mean, I guess one thing that I would just say is I want to make a comparison to like how to privilege. I mean, I've said it already in the episode, but like when things don't affect you, it's easy to write them off or disregard them as not being serious or important or whatever. But then the second that it does impact you, you very quickly, usually people are like, oh, wow, this is, you know, we need to pay attention to this. But that's like when it's, I don't want to say too late, but it's when it's already become an even more widespread problem that now it's impacting you. I guess I would encourage people to, just like I would ask them to around privilege around race, if you're a white person, or if you are heterosexual and cisgender, how you would around like LGBTQ issues, to like not wait until somebody that you know is impacted by it, but to take it seriously now and to take the proper precautions now so that it doesn't have to turn into something that's horrible and people are dying or their livelihood is being taken away. I mean, this is serious stuff. People are dying from it. They're continuing to die from it. The most recent statistics I've seen in Allen County are showing that our numbers haven't gotten better. At least not as of what the most recent data I've seen as of recording. So like, this is not gonna go away suddenly. And neither is racism, and neither is, you know, privilege around your gender or your sexual orientation. None of this stuff is going away overnight. And so like, I would ask people to get on board, like to recognize that just because it's not hurting you yet, doesn't mean that it's not going to, or I would even argue that it is still hurting you, because when things like racism or COVID are present in our communities, their ability to function in the world is squashed, right? And so then what could be coming out of the world from a person of color who's being squashed by institutional racism or, you know, their community, we don't get to benefit from that. So it's like, we don't even know the ways fully that some of this stuff impacts us, but knowing that we can't fully understand, but that these are real human beings that are on the other end of COVID or racism or whatever other ism you want to say, I would ask that we think about it as real human beings, not just this like faraway thing, and just be able to sit comfortably in our privilege because this isn't affecting me right now. It would be like a call to action to people to like actually take this stuff seriously, because it could affect you, but it shouldn't have to affect you in order to care about human lives.
Thank you so much for coming on, Nikki, and being with us today. It is very powerful hearing your story and hearing firsthand what it was like to have this experience and to actually be sick with COVID. And I'm so sorry that you went through it, but so grateful that you're willing to be vulnerable with all of us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And I appreciate being able to like connect some of the stuff that I care deeply about as it's relevant in the world. I appreciate you all for having me on and for being given the opportunity.